I'm going to talk about three things: value-based and value-added marketing, branded beef, and animal welfare. All of the money that we have in the beef industry is the sum of what domestic and international customers and consumers are willing to pay for beef. If we want more of that as an individual or for our sector of the industry, we have to add value and we have to capture that value. So we create it and then we capture it. And the best way that we can do that is through the things that I will talk about: value-based marketing, branded beef. Also, though, we may want more money in the total pot, and if that is the case, then we've got to convince customers and consumers to pay more for our product. There can be a disconnect because we can create value and not be able to capture it. So we can't build a better mousetrap just in the hope we're going to find somebody with a problem with mice. So in order to get that value, we must be able to capture it. There are many definitions of value. The one I like the best is the third one on this list: worth in usefulness to the possessor. And I also would say that before we can add value, we must, in fact, become value-based. 10 specific events are most important in converting us from commodity orientation to consumer orientation. And I'll go through those individually. Again, these are my opinion of the really important things. Mick Colvin, 1978, certified Angus beef. For the first time, we had something we could see phenotypically and be rewarded for. Mel Coleman, Siwash, Colorado, the first natural beef for consumers who wanted something other than just taste. Paul Engler and IBP, formula pricing, feeding cattle and then sharing in the revenues as it went through the packing plant. The beef checkoff. From the fertile mind of Darrell Wilkes came the original NCA value-based marketing task force, which did the war on fat, which did the national retail consumer study. The fourth thing is the 1987 change in passive activity rules for cattle feeding. We lost tax-sheltered feeding of custom cattle. Prior to that time, I lived in Texas, and we worked with the Texas Cattle Feeders Association, and in truth, they did not want differences in what feeder cattle were worth, nor did they want differences in what they were worth at the packing plant in order to be able to convince people to invest their funds. And then the fifth thing is retained ownership, selling in the beef, selling grade and yield, and eventually price marketing grids. Items 6 through 10 are listed in your proceedings. I'll go through those as well. John McNeil, Texas A&M University, developed Ranch to Rail. Started in Amarillo, second part of it in Kingsville. In the very early studies, the cattle that were most profitable were those that had the best health, were weaned, and preconditioned. And so John McNeil developed a program, VAC, value-added calf, 34-day or 45-day weaning period and preconditioning, that led us to value for calves that were treated differently prior to entry into stocker operations and feedlots. The eighth thing on that list was the National Beef Quality Audit for the Beef Quality Assurance Program of the National Cattlemen's Association. And again, Darrell Wilkes developed the concept of trying to see if we could save some of that $280 per animal that we were losing based on the 1991 National Beef Quality Audit by using alliances. And so the Strategic Alliance Field Study was conducted. In that study, we were able to recover, as you can see, about $63 of that loss. But we also, for the first time, identified the feeding of vitamin E to cattle for both domestic and retail sales to protect the color of the product while it was being exhibited. The ninth thing on my list was U.S. Premium. 444 people representing 1,400 feed yards in 16 states decided to buy half of a packing plant. And for an original investment of $55 per share, they have since received more than $200 million in premiums and incentives for having produced the right kinds of cattle. Ranchers Renaissance, the Harris Ranch Partnership for Quality, all of those were combining sectors of the industry in order to be more profitable. The last thing that has driven us to value-based and value-added marketing was the 2003 occurrence of BSE in Canada and the United States. From that, we were able to realize additional profits for source and age verification, for quality systems assessment, for beef export verification programs specifically to Canada. I say that the difference in value-based marketing and value-added marketing is this. Value-based marketing is based on things that are physical and phenotypic if we hold management constant, like more muscling, higher quality grades, and so on. My concept of value-added marketing has to do with changing management in some specific way that we can change raising practices, or it is, in fact, brand and kind constraints, or it's keeping records like source and age verification. So although the two differ, they are closely related in terms of value creation and value capture. Before we could really add value, we had to understand value-based marketing. We had to have a system that would recognize with premiums the difference in the products that we produced. From value-based marketing, we then could move to value-added marketing for the food chain. Where are we now? Randy Block says that on any given day in any given region of the United States of America, feeder calves of the same weight will sell for differences of $25 to $30 per hundredweight. Those differences are based on health, performance history, or their qualification for a premium or export program. These are the ways that you can capture, according to Cattle Facts, at least $14 per hundredweight advantage and up to $40 by climbing the stair steps to profitability, adding value as you go. We've gotten confused in much of what we write and read about this. This is actually value-added marketing, but was called value-based. And that's okay, because value-added depends on being value-based. But it simply shows through the superior video auction the advantages for weaning about $18 a head, for VAC 34 or VAC 45 about $15 per head, and for source and age verification about $13. A recent article by Cattle Facts says that in their summary of what cow-calf producers are presently doing, there is a $5 to $8 per hundredweight if you wean and precondition calves. $5 to $8 per hundredweight. And they said that two-thirds, 66%, of cow-calf producers are actually doing that. This is a combination of both value-based and value-added. It shows that on average, the U.S. Premium National Beef Program generated an additional $60 per head, $100 for those that were in the top 25. And of that, just because we can use source and age verification to go to Japan,
There's a $26 premium per head. How did we get to where we are? I say that it was two really great motivational speakers, experts in their field. The first was Wayne Purcell from Virginia Tech, who said, don't settle for the leftovers. Don't be the residual claimant on the producer's dollar. Get out there and create value through branding or niche marketing, and then capture that value. So you're trying to capture more of what is presently available. It's divvying up what we presently have. The second was Bill Meath, now of Elanco, who said, we've got to make the pond larger, bigger, so that we can all get a deeper drink. And again, said the pool of money that we generated is generated because we convince people that they can pay more than they presently do for our products. We've had sweeping changes in our industry, as Daryl Tatum has said, from a commodity-oriented industry to a consumer-driven industry. We've had a revolution at the meat counter that causes us to think and react to what the consumer thinks and wants in our product. Daryl Tatum characterized the distinctive features of an alliance or a supply chain as these. Most of them use value-based marketing. Many of them use breed differences. Many of them use branded beef. And some of them use verification, third-party auditing, to make absolutely certain that we do what we say we will do. More than 50 alliances or vertical coordination programs are identified in Drover's 2008 listing of the alliances. In a survey that Drover's did of how cow-calf producers market their weanling calves, 3/4 sell some of their cattle through the auction, 1/2 of them sell them private treaty or direct, 19% of them are using retained ownership, all the rest of those except the bottom two, about 1 out of every 10, use video sales or sell to a natural beef program or sell through a partnership or alliance. It's interesting that those 8% that market some calves through a partnership or alliance, when asked, 82% said, I discovered a marketing premium and that average premium was 9% more than the reported value for the calves that I sold. Examples of how a partnership works. Harris Ranch Partnership for Quality has incentives for genetics. There's a genetic premium. There's a weaning premium. There's a vaccination premium. And there's a seasonality premium. So you can, in fact, add value and capture it. But you must be in a program that can sell the product for more money. So rather than producing commodity beef, you must, in fact, be involved in some sort a branded beef program. How many grades and brands are presently sold in the United States? Well, we sell 3 qualities, prime, choice, and select. We have 63 USDA certified or process verified brands and more than 100 other kinds of brands. What did certified Angus beef do for our industry in value-based and value-added? Well, first of all, there are all sorts of Me Too programs for the upper two-thirds of choice. There are all kinds of Me Too programs using the word Angus. 46 of all of those that are certified by the USDA use the word Angus in their brand name. What about really high-priced beef? Here's some examples. You can buy a 6-ounce Japanese A5 Kobe filet mignon steak for $190 in Scottsdale, Arizona. Or you can buy a platter of middle meats from U.S. Prime in New York City for $1,111. Donald Trump sells packages of CAB Prime for $199 to $999. Allen Brothers in Chicago out at the stockyards, will sell you a smoked brisket from Wagyu beef for $100, or a four-pack of sirloin steaks for $9.95. The Rebholz family, Boise, Idaho, Snake River, Kobe, Japanese black Wagyu beef. High-end, fancy restaurant. Fancy restaurant and probably the fanciest of mail-order businesses. Someone sent me a $250 gift certificate to Lobel's of New York. I gave it to my wife and about a week later said, "What'd you do with that gift certificate?" She said, "Well, I added $39 to it and bought 3 porterhouse steaks." Very high end, very high prices. A major move in this business was made when U.S. Premium became the largest seller of different brands of beef. It was the first major packer to really say, "We're going to sell Prime and Choice and Select, but we're also going to sell branded beef of all sorts and kinds." There are also brands that we call OWN, O-W-N, in apostrophes. OWN brand means whoever sells it owns the brand. It isn't somebody who provides it. Kroger, City Markets, King Supers sells Butcher's Premium Choice Angus Beef. Ranchers Renaissance, along with Cargill Meat Solutions. Glenn Dolezal developed a palatability assessment critical control point program with 27 critical control points in it and sold the concept to Kroger. Albertsons has an OWN brand, and it has Supreme Beef, same label, used on all their beef. But if you travel from one part of the country to the other, the grade differs. So it's the same term, the same brand, but they try to fit it to the needs of that specific group of consumers. What did Mel Coleman's development of Coleman Natural Beef do to the industry? Well, it spawned all sorts of other natural beef programs. Those identified here are Laura's Lean, Harris Ranch, Maverick, Bradley 3. There was a cascade of brands based on specially raised cattle. And from that came natural and grass-fed and organic beef. When George Gillette bought Coleman Natural Beef, he converted it to what we now call never ever beef. No antibiotics ever, no preservatives ever, no added hormones ever, and always vegetarian fed. Western Grasslands Beef, now called Panorama Beef, is based on grass feeding. The people who buy grass-fed beef don't care nearly as much about what it was fed as the fact that they were not confined while they were being fed. But there are some advantages that can be used to sell it specifically related to the omega-3 fatty acids. One of the most successful organic beef producers is Prather Ranch in Northern California. They actually raised the cattle for the generation of collagen in their hides for use in puffing up ladies' lips and hips and removing their crow feet and so on. And then they have a carcass left over, and so they developed a branded beef program based upon the carcasses that were left at the end of the process. Never Ever has gone much further in some programs. The Harris Ranch Premium Natural, you'll see the Never Ever elements, top 3 added hormones, vegetarian diet, no antibiotics, ever, ever, ever. But then they say Angus cattle, fed in our feedlot, supplemental vitamin E, source and age verified, individual ID electronic, superior animal care, and guaranteed tender. Others have combined characteristics. Roy Moore has a product that's grass-fed, organic, approved by the Olympic Committee, approved by the American Heart Association, and approved by the National Organic Program. The Nolan Ryan Program in Huntsville, Texas, combines all natural with guaranteed tender. using color constraints, electrical stimulation, and 14 days of aging to make their product more valuable. Last summer, a group of graduate students and I visited a plant called Johansson's in Orland, California. It's really just kind of a pretty big locker plant. But he actually packages in retail packages product for 9 brands of beef, 5 of which are illustrated here, to meet the needs of those who shop locally and at farmers markets. What do brands do? Well, retailers like them because it ties the consumer back to them as the supplier. As I say here, it shifts the responsibilities for retail product with some sort of story back to the people who produce it and supply it, for quality and palatability and safety and wholesomeness and how the animal was raised and handled. Leanne Saunders of IMI Global has said a true brand for beef consists of at least 3 elements: traceability, which is source verification, a story, which is value propositions, quality control, which is process verification, and then if we're shipping them to Japan, we need source and age. So what about a true brand? First of all, it has to have traceability, source verification, when, where, and how. What do we do to determine that? We can use all sorts of help from industry in doing the source verification. The term story beef came from a visit that I made to Japan on behalf of the U.S. Meat Export Federation. We were walking around in a supermarket, Phil Singh and I, and he said, "What do you notice that's different about the beef that's sold in Japan?" And I said, "Well, it's got a lot of marbling and they're little old bitty pieces." He said, "No, the difference is they have 4,200 brands." I said, "Well, what makes them different?" He said, "Each brand has a story." So on the way home in 1988, I made a slide, the first slide that I ever used to explain what I thought story beef was, and it's illustrated here. I'm going to tell you a story about my beef. My story consists of a number of value propositions, things I think are important to you. You need to understand that because I think they're important to you and I want to do them, it's going to cost more. And those value propositions can include all sorts of things. Now, what happened to us when we started selling beef based on a story was people couldn't see it, they couldn't smell it, they couldn't taste it when they purchased it or when they ate it. And so we had to develop a concept of lending credence to each of those attributes so that there was some way to assure that what we were saying was true and valid. We had to be able to prove it if we were called upon to do so. And so the USDA developed process verification, quality control through process verification. They then developed even more programs. And now the Auditing, Review, and Compliance Branch of Agriculture Marketing Service and USDA does all of these programs, PVPs and QSAs, and they have a natural organic program which is overseen by our federal government. Then NCBA has a beef quality assurance program, and there is a group of private individuals who own Certified Humane. Here is the first of the process verified products. Roy Moore has a product that's tested for antibiotics and pesticides. In addition to all the knowledge of the other credence attributes, he calls upon the government to be the third-party verifier. What has happened most recently in natural, organic, and grass-fed beef is that supermarkets have wanted to develop their own products. Where I live in Aurora, Fort Collins, Colorado, Kroger's, King Supers, and City Markets sell something called private selection. I've monitored those prices to see, will people pay more money for natural or organic product? This slide just simply shows that for the middle meats, the rib and loin, they'll pay $3 to $4 more for natural and $5 to $6 more per pound for organic. But those programs, even though Safeway has one, SuperValu has one, Kroger has one, are not doing well. And in talking to the people responsible for those programs, they say, what we lost in doing it as an own brand is connectedness back to the person that I trusted to be looking over that product, to provide oversight to make sure that I'm protecting my family. There are people who believe that Laura Freeman looks out for them in the production of beef. There are people who believe that Roy Moore and his family look after them in the production of beef. How much beef is branded? Well, best I can tell, a little more than half. And the really remarkable thing that has occurred between 2004 and 2007 is how much of it is being taken over by supermarkets and away from suppliers. And I think that trend will reverse. You will notice that of natural beef, 9% of it sold in retail markets is natural. Less than 0.1% is grass-fed, and less than 0.2% is, in fact, organic. I'll end the discussion by talking very briefly about the new elements of story beef. Alan Momsworth, who writes for Conscious Choice, wrote a story, and he said, you know, there's a new kind of story beef. And in that, the elements, the value propositions, are things like, did the people who grew the cattle live nearby? Did they properly care for the animals? Did they treat their farm and ranch workers fairly? Did they practice environmental stewardship? Did they operate sustainably? And did they receive a fair price for them? First of all, were they produced or processed or both nearby? Poll after poll in the United States, because of problems we've had with products from Mexico and China, have in fact created problems for us. Those from Canada have not. But they want cool. The other thing, a paper was published in the Journal of Animal Science done by some ag economists who indicated that the ideal steak, number one, is locally produced. The second part of the new story beef is, did the people who grew the cattle operate fairly with stewardship and sustainability? Fairness. This all started with the people who picked the coffee beans in Latin and South America. Were they actually getting paid enough for what they did? And the terms green and stewardship and sustainability mean the management and conservation of natural resources for the present and future generations while controlling and protecting the environment. So all of those terms mean environmentally friendly, sustainable. I came across a quote from George Washington Carver, who said, I believe the great Creator has put ores and oils on this earth to give us a breathing spell. As we exhaust them, we must be prepared to fall back on our farms, which are God's true storehouse and can never be exhausted. For we can learn to synthesize materials for every human need from the things that grow. The Harris Ranch story. Who produced it? The Harris Ranch family. Where does it come from? The Western United States. What do we care about? Fair trade, fair treatment, fair compensation, the comfort and well-being of its livestock, the land, the soil, the air, the water, the environment, the health, safety, and pleasure of the people who purchase it and eat it. Finally, did the people who grew the cattle properly care for the animals? There's a difference between animal welfare and animal rights. We say that animal welfare is a philosophy that we have as people who work in this industry about how we care for our animals. Animal rights is a political movement intended to cause people to become vegetarians. So there's a huge difference in what the two terms mean. We do know that consumers care about animal care. We know there are activists who are out there trying to make sure that as many people as possible stop eating our products, like PETA. They have been able to get through to quick service restaurants like Burger King, to restaurants like Wolfgang Puck, to packers like Smithfield and Cargill and Maple Leaf Foods, and to supermarkets like Whole Foods. Our best answer to those questions is the Beef Quality Assurance Program of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. For those of us in the United States, we have had care and handling of cattle guidelines since the first national market cow and bull audit of how we should humanely care for animals. We've had experts like Temple Grandin tell us what it is that we need to be auditing. And we have auditors running around all over the United States making sure that cow-calf operations and feedlots and packing plants are doing those things. And then finally, we say that those in the BQA program abide by a code of ethics for selling market cows and bulls that says, I will do everything possible to humanely gather, handling, and transport cattle. We have terrible things on the horizon. The law that they're attempting to get passed in California that really just affects swine and poultry could easily progress backward across the country to the East Coast. So we in the beef industry must, in fact, prepare to tell people what we do, write down what we do, be able to prove what we do, to honestly answer questions with regard to animal care and handling. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gary, for that stimulating and provocative, in some ways, presentation. We have time to take one or two questions at the present time, if there are any, of Dr. Smith. We have three, four mics set up. One, two, and three, I'll call them.